Okay, good morning. This is Henry Harris, and it is Thursday, September 13th, and we are here for another installment of the weekly Emuna teleconference. I want to wish everyone who's listening now and in the recording a Gemach Sima Tova. I want to make a few announcements. First of all, Emir Tzashem, we will be back on for next Thursday. The only Thursday I suspect that we will miss will be the Thursday of Sukkos, of Chol HaMoed Sukkos. Otherwise, Emir Tzashem will be continuous throughout the Thursdays, Thursday mornings. I also want to mention that this coming Sunday is the last day to gain the benefit of the discounted tickets for the upcoming Innate Health Conference, the sixth annual conference that's scheduled for November 4th through 6th. We have a wonderful variety of speakers coming from around the world as well as locally. So those discounts are available till this Sunday. I also want to take this opportunity to invite anyone who's interested in participating in the in this conference call. It's a free call. And I have in mind to ask once a year for anyone who's interested to participate in sponsorship opportunities to make a donation at JewishCenterForWellbeing.com or to contact me if you're interested in a sponsorship of some kind. It's a free service, and I love the fact that anyone can participate and listen. And if you'd like to have a share in that learning opportunity, then let me know. Okay, so we're going to start. And this week's title I sent out a little bit of a taste was the overlooked secret to tshuva, the overlooked secret to successful tshuva that you already know. And what do I mean by that? Let's back up for a second. Let's just do a quick review as to what it is that we're looking to accomplish on this call, or what I'm looking to accomplish. To me, this is an opportunity to revisit the truth of Emuna. Emuna is the realization, it's the understanding that we live in the Creator's world. We live in the world that was created and is ongoingly created by the Creator. And our perception of it is a function of the same ongoing creation that is just as he's creating and sustaining the entire universe and all of that which unfolds in this world, in this physical dimension. He's creating and sustaining everything in this physical world. It's also the case that my inner world, my capacity to see and perceive the world, is also under his jurisdiction. He's managing and running that as well. And I, of course, have an exciting and crucial role as a participant, not just a participant, a partner, in how I experience and relate to my perception. But the perception itself is something that's part of his jurisdiction. He's running that. I don't have control over my inner world in a direct sense to summon forth the thoughts that I want or to banish the thoughts that I don't want. I have an opportunity to understand how he runs his world, and how I am part of his world. And through my understanding of how he's doing that, I have a wonderful opportunity to fulfill the role and job that I've been placed in this world, and to not undertake to fulfill a job that I was not here, put here to do. When I understand what's true, and to me, that's what this conversation about Emuna is focused on. When I understand what's true and what cannot be true, then I have I'm wonderfully positioned to fulfill my job. When I misunderstand what the nature of the world is, the nature of my reality and experience is, when I misunderstand that, then it's impossible for me to engage in my actual job. And I end up doing something other than my job, which generally doesn't go very well. I'm beautifully situated and positioned. I was designed to fulfill my job. I was not designed to do something that's not my job. And the way I like to come back to this, as you've heard me say many times, is the Pasuk in Mishle, Ose Elokim Esa Adam Yashar. God made people straight. There is a simplicity, there's a natural design within us, like a GPS, like a homing device, that we are seeking we're seeking goodness. We're seeking responsibility. We're seeking good generosity of heart and to be like, to be godly. We're seeking that. There's a part of us that wants that, that we don't have to engineer. And when we are present to that inherent goodness, and we are not running after the second part of the verse, God made people straight and they seek out calculations. When we get overly engaged in our perception of the world, in our vision and version of how reality is working and what the implications are of what I see and feel, without understanding his vision and his, the truth of his oversight and his running things, then I get caught up in a whole set of calculations that really works at odds with that beautiful, simple nature. And so so that's kind of the essence of my job. And going, you know, building on that understanding, I want to revisit the topic for today, which is the overlooked secret to successful tshuva that we already know. What is that secret? What's the secret to successful tshuva that is overlooked, easily overlooked, and that we already know? Well, I'm going to share with you the way the Gemara describes it in Menachos. Okay? This is a fascinating, so beautiful. So the verse, the Gemara on page Kaf Ches Amid Beis 29b, it looks at the verse in the Torah that Ela told us Hashemayim v'Haaretz behi baram. These are the accounts of the creation of the heavens and earth in their having been made and their having been created. Behi baram is a funny language. And the Gemara focuses on the fact of that slightly funny language. It wonders what the extra hey there is. Behi baram, it's an extra sound. So the Gemara says, al tikri behi baram, don't read it as in their having been created, ela behi baram. He created the world with the letter hey. Understand from that verse that the Torah is telling us that God created the world with the letter hey. So now the question is, what does that mean? What does it mean that God created the world with the letter hey? Why was, the Gemara continues, why was it that, what does it mean that the world was created with the letter hey? It says, because the world is compared to the shape of this letter. The letter hey, you know the visual shape, it's three legs, it's like a three-sided shape with an opening on the bottom. We're talking about the letter hey. The world was created with the letter hey, and it's three-sided shape with an opening on the bottom. And what the Gemara says is that, why is it open on the bottom? What does it mean that the world is similar to the shape of this letter hey? Because it says, anyone who wants, shekol harotze letzeis, yetzei, anybody who wants to leave this world, anybody who wants to exit from reality, i.e. depart from the world in which what God has in mind, he can leave. He's got free will. He can drop out of reality. He just drops out of the world. Now, then the Gemara asks a question, umay time atalya kare, why is it that there's a hanging leg? If you know the shape of the letter hey, is that it's true there are three sides to the letter hey, but the left side is not a connected side. It's got a space between the top of the third side and the upper kind of, you know, roof or whatever you would call it. Why is there that gap there? And the answer the Gemara gives is dihadar b'tshuva. If a person wants to do tshuva, if a person wants to repent and return to the world in which God created, ma'ilimei ula'il, he can go up and ula'il bach, he can go up. I'm sorry, he can go back up. He can go back in. There's a door to re-enter. So then the Gemara asks the kind of somewhat basic and somewhat obvious question. Why do you need a separate door? If the world was created with an opening, with the letter hey, to suggest that there's an opening, a person can leave this world from below, and there's also a way to return, why do I have to have a separate doorway to return? In my house, I have a door that's used both for entry and exit. I don't have a separate door, one for entry and one for exit. I have one door. Why can't we use this one door that you left from to go back in? So the Gemara answers, Lo mistaya milsa, it won't work. It won't work to go back up the way you came. Now the question is, what does that mean? Why is it that it won't work? So from the answer the Gemara gives, I have a little bit of an understanding that to me is quite consistent with what we're learning about. And the Gemara explains, this is consistent with the teaching of Reish Lakish, who said, what is the meaning of the verse in Mishlei? It says, about a person who wants to do tshuva, im la leitzim, if a person wants to go in the direction of a leitz, of a scoffer, of a cynical, scorning person, hu yalitz, he can go there, like no one's going to get in his way. If a person wants to go in the direction of a negative, of negativity, Hashem is not going to stop him. Now, alternatively, the verse continues, ula novim, but if a person wants to go in the direction of humble, of a humble person, meaning he wants to be godly and he wants to do tshuva, yitain chen, he will give chen, he'll give grace, he'll give a special divine blessing to that person. And this is also consistent with the expression, one who comes to purify himself, Hashem helps. He's helped from above. But one who comes to impurify himself, one who comes to lower himself, they don't get in his way. Heaven doesn't get in his way. So now the explanation is, so back to the original point, the Gemara says there's free will in this world. A person who wants to depart can depart. A person who wants to do tshuva, and that departure is signified by the opening in the bottom of the hay. A person who wants to return and do tshuva, there's an opening to get back in. Why do I need a separate door to get back in? Because it won't work to go back the way you came out. And now the explanation, as we saw, is because, and here's where the answer comes out, is that a person who wants to go in the direction of the humble, it says that God will give him grace, God will give him chen. From there, the Gemara learns that you cannot, a person who wants to do tshuva needs siyata dishmaya. He can't do tshuva on his own. It's impossible to simply say to oneself, I will break through my barriers, I will overcome my mistaken habit, I will overcome my misunderstanding, and I will bust through and reassume my position in the world of reality and clarity, etc. It doesn't work like that. The nature of the metaphor, as I see it, is that what the Talmud is saying is that there's a need for a new opening because you can't go back the way you came. The way a person leaves this world is through a mistaken understanding. It's a ruach shtus, the Gemara says. The person doesn't transgress unless there enters into him a spirit of insanity, a false thinking, an insecure thought, whatever language you want to describe it in. In the moment we react, in the moment we become angry, in the moment we act out, in the moment that whatever we do that's mistaken, it's based on an understanding of the world that is by definition a misunderstanding. There's no new version of that doorway. You can't go back through that doorway. You can't do a different direction of that thinking. You can't do an edited version of that thinking. You can't do more or less of that thinking and get back to a place of closeness to the Almighty. You need a new door, which is to say, in my understanding, you need new thought. The Almighty Himself has to give you a new door, a new way of understanding, a new way of thinking, which is, it's interesting because I always view this Gemara and this verse to explain as follows. If you want to do tshuva, go for it, and guess what? Not only are you going to undertake it and you'll do things with your hard work and your free will, but you'll also get a bonus of divine blessing, right? You work hard and the Almighty will help you. And the way that the Gemara is explaining it and the way that's clear in the way Rashi describes it, is that no, it's not just that you'll get help, it's that you cannot do tshuva without divine assistance. It's impossible to go on your own and to get the accomplishment of a change in a change in your life. You must have divine assistance. There's no other way. And to me, and I think to us in the conversation we're having, we understand that to mean there's new thought. The gift of new thought is what allows a person to walk a new path. There's no other way that a person can get that. And that's not in his hands. What's in our hands is the desire, the ability to recognize I'm standing in a mistaken outlook. It's not appropriate to react in the way I'm reacting with my spouse, children, etc. I understand that this is a mistake. I understand that I am in need of tshuva. And now I understand that there's a gift associated with tshuva that I can't accomplish or make. It's by definition a divine blessing. And now I'm off the hook in terms of generating the new thought. I'm off the hook in terms of creating inside myself or finding the new feeling, finding the change of heart. I am responsible to know what's true about how things go in this world. There's only one thing that is driving anything in this world. There's only one power source. That's the gift. That's the Almighty, and that's, through in our experience, the gift of divine thought in this moment. Right now, it looks so reasonable and normal to me to react with upset in the case of my child, you know, not listening to me in a way that I know is not effective. I know it's not helpful, and I'm speaking personally here in that context. But I also know that for me to engage in the could-should perception of I should be able to react differently by this point, it's a misunderstanding. There's a point where the clarity that this is pointing to is that I'm humbled. I let go of the pretense that I can literally break through on my own with my hard work to a place called tshuva. I can't do it. I let go of that pretext. And once I do, I'm free to turn to the Almighty and say, I want this and I need your help. There's no other way I can get to the tshuva without your assistance. So I'm going to stick it out. I'm going to wait. I'm going to not give up. I'm not going to go into yeush, despair, because I've had this habit one time, five times, 20 times. And I'm like, how discouraged I should be that I haven't changed yet. I don't know how long it takes. I don't know when the divine blessing of new thought is going to show up. I just know there's only one way, and part of the tshuva is to surrender to that. And that itself is a tremendous accomplishment. The accomplishment of knowing what drives this world and what drives my inner world is only the Almighty. And therefore, because of my understanding of that, I'm willing to step back from the judgment about how I'm doing and the impatience with how I'm doing. I have this quiet, humble surrender that is persistent and yearning and hopeful. That itself is a form of tshuva. I mean, if you think about it, what was the mistake? I got so caught up in my vision of the world. I got so caught up in my thinking that I felt compelled to What happened? Hello? Hold on. Hi, this is Henry Harris. I have no idea whether you heard me up until now, because I looked over at my computer console and I saw something that happened to my internet. Can you tell me, was I heard?
Yes, Rabbi Harris, we heard you up until, at least I heard you up until about a minute ago, and then I just suddenly didn't hear you. But now we do.
Okay, great, because I got confused. Okay, so let me just then continue and wrap up and say that it's inherently what do I mean when I say that this is the overlooked secret of successful tshuva that we all know? We're on this call. The only reason why you're probably turning into this call either live or recording or by recording is because you've had you've had the insight, you've had the ability, the gift of seeing that the Almighty is making available to you new thought. You don't have the ability to generate thought on your own. On the other hand, it's totally reliable that new thought shows up, both insecure as well as peaceful and new thought. You've seen that. You've seen how, and it's such a blessing. It's like I can't even begin to express the indescribable, I can't begin to express the blessing, the gratitude of seeing how there is this lifeline of an inner world. There's an inner world that's no less real than the outer world. The Almighty is running an inner world that I'm sharing in, that I'm living in, and I have some understanding of that, that there's new things available and that I'm not experiencing an outer world that I have to somehow wrestle with. No, I'm experiencing an inner world. That's all I'm experiencing, and He's managing that, and it's fine. I'm totally fine except when I'm not, but I'm, in theory, I'm fine with the fact that He's making new thought available, some that's constricted, some that's expansive, and I see that sometimes, I don't see it sometimes, and that gives me so much peacefulness because I'm free to dig in and persist and desire and yearn and have hope that I just have my job of looking and waiting and asking for assistance with persistence for help, for tshuva. Because there's no other way the tshuva comes. There's no way I can't get back the way I came out. I have to come through a new door. There is no other doorway except the gift of new thought. That's the secret to tshuva. And if a person knows that, then he's unencumbered by the result in any given moment. Of course we care about results, but we don't, we have a different measuring stick of where success is going to come from. And to me, it insulates me. It makes a huge difference in terms of insulating me from discouragement, from yeush. The biggest obstacle we have is the yeush that we get all caught up in, because the Almighty's sending help. It's when I get off the train, or whatever the metaphor we want to use, when I get off the road, then I miss out on the next moment of help that the Almighty's offering. It's me that takes myself out of the option for new growth and new success. So that's the Gemara's understanding of the secret to tshuva. It's the gift of new thought. It's the awareness that we can't do it on our own, and that is what allows us to persist and not give up, and then be zocha to siyata d'shmaya. Okay, that's my little, not so little monologue for today, and welcome everybody, and how's everybody doing? And take a moment to consider whether you have something to add or a question, etc. Alternatively, I could continue talking about something else that I'm seeing and where this is practical, but please feel free to interrupt me. So, I've been having an experience recently it's not recently in the sense that it's, the phenomenon is new, but there's been a slightly different experience of it on my end. that there's one of my children has a little bit of a greater tendency to kind of, you know, live in his own world, where the world just, you know, it's quite common that requests I make or his mother makes are, when it comes down to the fact that he didn't fulfill my other request or he ignored it, his version of events is like, well, I didn't hear you say that. I heard you say this. In other words, it's not like I intended or was conscious of disregarding your request. I just thought you said this. Didn't you say this? And that's somewhat common. You know, he's just not seeing, and there's not room in his world for, you know, his perspective. And the truth is, I believe him, even though I would get annoyed. I think but I still see it as a character flaw that he's just, you know, not tuning into a world outside of his preferences and et cetera. And I would get quite angry, you know, when it would happen on a number of occasions. And even as I felt the necessity to provide some kind of response, some kind of discipline to what had become a habitual, you know, a recurring thing where he just wouldn't listen or disregard things, I could tell that the anger wasn't helpful. You know, it was undermining the overall thing. And lo and behold, just yesterday, his school was out early because of the fast, and he had told my wife that he was going to go to a friend, and he would call. My wife just said, please call us to let us know where you're going to be. And school ended, the other kids came home, he wasn't. I asked what was the deal. She told me, and then an hour went by, 2 hours went by. He hadn't called until it was already like close to evening, and I was, you know, I was bothered because not only did his mother request that he call, but this wasn't the first time that I had literally gone and driven around looking for him to various friends, and then told him, you know, point blank, I've asked you to contact us. I don't want you to just go off. So I called him at around 7 o'clock. And at this point, I have to say, I was upset, but not upset in the sense that I was reactive. Like, I really saw that I could speak to him and communicate to him in a way that I was clear what the message was. You know, it was about the issue of him listening and his making room in his world for our instructions and not overlooking it. So when I spoke to him, he said, oh, I'm sorry I didn't call you. I said, well, you know, what happened? He said, well, mommy just told me to, I don't know, whatever his version of events was, it was not what, you know, his mother recalled. And it was, you know, another example. So I said, well, that's not the first time. So he said, well, were you concerned that I was in danger, right? So he was kind of changing the subject a bit, like, was there an objective reason for me to be worried? And I was like, well, that's not really the point. Truth be told, I wasn't really, really fearful for your safety. But it's become somewhat common that you, for whatever reason, and I don't believe it's malevolent, I don't believe that it's willful, but somehow or another, our messages are not landing with you. And I, you know, and what I thought of was that I wanted to give him a consequence, but I wanted it to be that the consequence was pure instructional, educational, it wasn't reactive angry, which I've done plenty of times. And so I said, I just don't know how to, I'm not sure how to get through to you because I want you to have more room in your world for our input. Because it's not good for you that you're not hearing us. And so he was quiet, and he said, well, what do you suggest? So I said, I think there should be a consequence, and I'm not sure which one to give you. So he thought about that for a moment, and I said, I thought of two consequences, and I'll let you choose the consequence, right? So I thought of the two consequences, and I kind of put it in his lap. And I said to him, I don't think it's the consequence itself that is going to get you to see things differently. I think it's going to come from you seeing for yourself that mommy and I care that you see this. And we're just trying to get your attention. That's all. I don't think you're doing this, you know, to rebel. I don't think that you're a bad kid, God forbid. I just am not sure how to get your attention. And it was a different feeling. You know, it was a totally different feeling, and I'm so grateful for that. And I have to be honest with you, it's miraculous to me. It's literally miraculous to me that I was navigating the conversation that way. It is. It makes so much sense to me, the Gemara that we just learned together about the gift of, you know, there's a need for a new door. There's no version of the old door that you can get back to reality in. You need a new door. This door was not visible to me in the past. And to be honest with you, there's a good chance I suspect that it might not be visible to me in the future. But I see with a certain amount of clarity that this is a new door, and I'm grateful for it. I am grateful for the gift of tshuva, because that's what it is. Tshuva is a gift. If I have my work to do, I certainly, you know, I have to clarify what my mistake is. I have to acknowledge, I have to be moda al emes, to admit the truth of a mistaken action on my part and the inappropriate and destructive facets of my mistake. But then there's the point where I say, okay, Almighty, I'm ready to stand in this desire for change, and I'm ready to admit my mistake and to express my desire for my regret and my commitment to undertake this and not let go of it. I'm not going to give up, but I can't do more than that. Now it's in your hands. Please help me find a new doorway. And any person who's ever experienced the gift of new thought knows that this is true, and knows that there is a reality to this as a possibility, that there's a hopefulness. And that's what allows us to persist. And that is in the merit of that submission, in the merit of that humility, of acknowledging that it's not in my hands to engineer my life. It's with divine blessing. In the merit of that alone, we are worthy, according to the Gemara, we are opening ourselves to that divine assistance. And I'm truly astonished by it. And that gratitude to me is the lifeline. Now, and what do I mean by this also struck me. I'm just going to keep talking if you're not going to interrupt and, you know, offer a thought or an insight or a question, which I have no problem with. I just enjoy others' comments and questions when they have them. But I'll share with you that it struck me. We've talked many times about the idea of the Exodus of Yetzias Mitzrayim as kind of an, you know, the archetypal example of being delivered, you know, being brought out from a place of constriction, that it wasn't us that got our way out of Egypt. We were the ones who stuck around. You know, the Jews that left were the ones that hadn't given up and that perished in the plague of Choshech, of darkness. The Jews that left didn't find a way out. It's that they were still there when the time for redemption came. And we talk about the Yetzias Mitzrayim everywhere. There's not one Chag, there's not one holiday, there's not one Shabbos, there's not one experience practically that we don't say Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Everything is Rosh Hashanah, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, Yom Kippur, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Everywhere, it's all over our prayers. It's in the Kiddush, it's in the davening, it's in the benching, it's everywhere. Yetzias Mitzrayim is, to me, the yesod of this gratitude that underlies everything, the possibility that something can come from nothing, that I can be brought to a new place independent of my skill, strength, merit. I can, that is to me to me, it makes so much sense why Yetzias Mitzrayim is the foundation of everything. It's the first holiday. It's talked about in every location there is the ability to talk about it, because everything is begins with the awareness. Every opportunity begins with the awareness that there is something, there's divine intervention. The Almighty is not just creating this world, He's intervening in this world. It's Him that offers the possibility of something new. And therefore, however much I've come to feel that life is a certain way, that I'm a certain way, that my spouse is a certain way, that my child is a certain way, all of that, my understanding of this inner world, my understanding of the inside-out nature of the reality that God is creating, it tells me that I'm not experiencing the world directly. I'm experiencing my thinking. As much as it feels overwhelmingly enveloping and smothering, or whatever the word you would choose to describe it is, I know that there's, it's never the case that it's the actual reality, it's the actual truth. There's a truth that's real independent of my perception of it. That's why gratitude to me is literally a lifeline. Gratitude is acknowledging that something came to me that was helpful from a source that was beyond me, that I couldn't have, I didn't make it on my own. Something came to me, helpful to me, that I wasn't responsible for. That's gratitude. And gratitude is the understanding that things can show up that weren't there before. You know, I feel fortunate in this moment to share this clarity that I can witness in my own life. New possibilities, new ways of responding to children, new ways of reacting to my wife. That there's no way to explain it other than that something new showed up from nothing that I did. And that's gratitude, and that's Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's why gratitude is a lifeline. It's hope that it's, I'm not alone. I'm not stuck. There is a reality greater than what I see. That's more real. That's more real than my perception in any given moment. I was shopping the other day for the groceries. My wife had requested of me to get a certain thing. And I thought, do we really need so much of that? It's kind of expensive. You know, I tend to be the more frugal one. She tends to be, not that she's not frugal, she's just, I would say she's normal, and I'm very frugal. And I had this cheshbon going on, like, we don't need those that much. I can get less. And then the thought came to me, it was like, why are you doing that? You know, like, why are you going there? That's your version of things. And your whole interest is, you know, you want to live in a world that's not defined by your immediate perception. Like, you can have those perceptions. That's fine. It's not a problem to feel frugal, to feel, you know, interested in changing. No, we don't need that much to contradict her. It's fine that you feel those things. But who says that they're the thing that you want to run after? And there was that brief moment in the produce aisle that I loaded up on the thing that she asked me to load up on with just the realization, like, it's the right thing, you know? This is something the Almighty wants. As much as it feels to me that it's not necessary, I trust that there's, you know, this is not real, and that was liberating. You know, there was a sweet feeling of freedom that I can have thoughts, I can feel those thoughts, and yet I can feel them and have them and feel them without them literally dictating my course of events, where I get into a whole tussle. She always asks for this, and we don't need that much, and how am I going to deal with that? And then she's going to be upset, and I don't know. It was there, and I saw it, and that's this direction of tshuva. Tshuva begins with the awareness of this whole beautiful understanding of the inside-out nature of our experience. We leave this world. Honor and covered kina, covered and taiva, and maitzianis adam in olam. These character traits, these ways of thinking, remove a person from the world. We leave this world through the mistaken thinking that we entertain with our misunderstanding. It's not that we have the thoughts that take us out of this world. It's that we become fooled by them. We don't understand the nature of thought, whereby we take that thought personally. We run after the thought. And then we run after the thought to the point that we literally exit the world. Then when we want to, at some point, we wake up to the mistake we made, we want to re-enter the world, it's with the tshuva of understanding. At the root of the tshuva is, I don't want my thought per se. Like, I have thought, and it's not a problem to have thought, but I don't want to dig into it. I don't want to invest in it. I want to have thought without it having me. And that's the gift of what's behind this tshuva. And that's our opportunity. So whatever, we have these beautiful days, today, tomorrow, through the gift of Yom Kippur, every day of the year, of course, we can do tshuva. Every day of the year, we can understand the nature of this thought, the nature of how our misunderstanding about thought can lead us to run after thinking, can lead us to exit the world. But these days, it's like, it's the game is rigged to succeed during these days. And the beginning of that undertaking is not to feel different. It's not to act different per se. It's not the definition of success. The definition of success is I keep coming back to this because it's so helpful to me. The definition of success is to know what's true and to know what's not true. And that a person can always do, even as he's reacting and going about habits that are unhelpful. But if he's got one iota of clarity that he's living inside of thought, that he's experiencing the opportunity and the challenge of divine thought, but that divine thought can shift not through his direct exertion, but through understanding, through turning to the Almighty with that understanding. That's the doorway. That's the new door that we're looking to. I don't know if that's clear or if that's helpful. That's what I'm seeing. So I'm going to pause again. See where people are. I don't know that I have something new to add, and I'm learning that there's a value in speaking and sharing when there's something that you're seeing that's new, and in not speaking when there isn't something you're seeing that's new, because otherwise I'd just be rehashing concepts, and I'm not really here to share concepts per se. My interest is to share an understanding of the understanding of how freshness, of how newness is really the nature of what's our life experience. There's a fresh and new is what really underlies our experience of life. No matter what it looks and feels like, it's what's fresh and new. The awareness of that it's fresh and new. So, what I think I'm going to do is just reiterate that I am, a couple invitations are out there right now. One is the reminder that the upcoming 6th annual Innate Health Conference, this November 4th through 6th, there are discounted tickets that are available until this Sunday. And after that, the prices go back to their regular normal price. We have a wonderful lineup of speakers coming from all over. We've got Dickon Bettinger and Keith Blevins and Brett Chitty and Dr. Annika Hurwit. We've got a special woman named Wendy Sagise, who's coming from California, who's had a life-changing understanding of these principles in her encounter with stage 4 cancer. She's got a serious illness, but her understanding about how she relates to it is different through her understanding of the inside out. And of course, all the wonderful, talented speakers that are in the local area. I want to extend an invite again for anyone who's interested in participating and supporting this weekly teleconference. Baruch Hashem, we are fortunate to have both live and quite a few folks that access it in the recording. If you'd like a part in that and through a dedication or a sponsorship, I figure once a year I'll reach out around this time to invite people to participate. And I welcome people's input. You can either email me at info@yourcenterforwellbeing.com or you can leave a message at 845-393-1529. And I look forward to seeing you in Metzeshem. We're speaking with you next Thursday back in action. I wish everyone a gemach sima tova, a beautiful and inspired seal, being sealed in the Book of Life. Have a great day and a good Shabbos.